two step-siblings who make a colossal mistake and sleep together, a gay man who suspects he may be the sperm donor of his lesbian friend's baby, a young woman who seduces a young gay man and his straight father, these are some of the unusual plot twists in the new comedy Happy Endings. It was written and directed by my guest Don Roos, who also wrote and directed the films The Opposite of Sex and Bounce. Happy Endings opens this weekend. It stars Lisa Kudrow, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Laura Dern, Steve Coogan, Jesse Bradford, and Tom Arnold. Let's start with a scene from it. Kudrow plays a woman with a secret. When she was a teenager, she got pregnant and intended to have an abortion, but she had the baby and put it up for adoption. She has no idea what became of her child. In this scene, she meets a mysterious young man named Nicky, played by Jesse Bradford. He's tracked her down to tell her that he knows her secret. He even has her son's adoption files. Nicky is a would-be documentary filmmaker with a proposal involving her son.
Do you want to find him? Because I can tell you how on one condition, which is you let me film the whole thing. You finding your kid. See, I need to get into AFI. You know AFI? AFI is American Film Institute. So they have scholarships. Well, they have like one scholarship a year. So I need a killer film, a documentary, like you finding your kid.
I don't believe this.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we would have the fake parts of it. Sure, we would. But the emotion would be true. Your guilt and stuff, that would be our selling point. I'm so glad that you're not a dog. I mean, you know, even if the story is great, people want to look at good-looking people. You know, all things being equal. So, huge relief when I saw you, you know? And I can make you look better. That's lighting.
I don't need to see my son. I was going to have an abortion, in fact, until someone talked me out of it.
If you don't care, then why'd you keep updating the adoption agency with your addresses? There's four of them in the file.
He has the information. He can contact me if he wants to.
He won't. He threw it away, the whole file. That's how I got it. If it wasn't for me, you'd go to your grave without ever seeing him. You can keep that. I have the original. I needed to reshoot finding it for the movie. There's other stuff, too. There's other stuff like this that I can... Anyway, just say yes. I mean, it's win-win here.
This is a human being you're talking about.
Yeah, who you gave away. Okay? I mean, come on, don't be like that. Look, I know that this is one of those big ideas, but it's really just better if you just say yes to the movie, because otherwise I have to charge you $25,000 just for the info. Because they wanted AFI for a year.
Okay, you tell me where my son is or I'm going to the police. In fact, no, I'm going to go to the police anyway, you miserable jackass, and I'm going to press every charge they come up with. How's that for a big idea?
Don Roos, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Several sexual taboos are broken in your movie, not graphically, but I mean the characters break them. And in the movie there are consequences for these violations, but they're not the predictable ones, and there's nobody kind of preaching the morality behind these taboos. So you're not being led in the predictable directions, although, again, there are consequences. And I'm wondering why you wanted to go into the consequences of breaking certain sexual taboos.
I guess it's a lot about me being gay, which was, you know, when I was growing up, I was born in 1955. So coming of age in the 60s, in the early part of the 60s, there was nothing more taboo than being gay. And there wasn't anybody in of course, there's nobody in your family who's gay. At least there weren't gay families or gay parents back then that I was aware of. And you're very alone, and yet it feels right for you, and yet society is against it. So I think my initial attraction to taboos is why are they there? Why are we so afraid? What are the mechanisms that society uses to punish people for breaking taboos? And they never really feel like taboos to the people who are breaking them.
You know, abortion, adoption, lesbian parents using sperm donors are all issues in your movie. You recently became a father.
Yeah, you know, and my politics changed a lot in a way when I became a father, because I depend upon young women and young men choosing not to abort. So I was... All my life, I've been right to choose kind of guy, but secretly hoping that that girls in this country would do, that there were girls who thought it was wrong. I depended to build my family on girls thinking that abortion was not for them. It was weird.
So you adopted?
We adopted, yeah. We adopted. And we were hoping to find a girl who thought abortion was wrong, and yet gay parents were a fabulous idea. So it's a very narrow group, you know.
What are the circumstances between the mother of your child?
I can't go into a lot of it because it's almost not even my story to tell. It's our daughter's story to tell, and she should know things first. But how it works nowadays for adoption, or at least how it works in Los Angeles, is you contact a lawyer and say that you would like to adopt. And he has an outreach program where girls in trouble contact him. And they kind of, those girls are asked, are you opposed to a same-sex couple? And if you aren't, I have some names for you. So she called about four couples, interviewed us. We sent her a letter with photos of ourselves, and she chose us. So it's a wonderful way, I think, for the birth mom. I can't speak. I'm not a birth mom. But it sounds like a wonderful way for her to have a kind of a control of a parenting decision, the most important parenting decision she gets to make herself, and she has a little bit more power.
Now, Happy Endings has been playing at some gay and lesbian film festivals before it opens nationally on Friday. And you recently said gay cinema has grown up. Our movies have become just as tedious as theirs. what were you thinking of?
Well, I mean, we now have the ability to make tedious sex comedies and exploitation films, just like the straight society has been able to do for years. In fact, the industry is founded on appealing to our basest instincts. So I think we're there now, thankfully. It's just harder to treat a responsible gay topic because I think it's more threatening. If you are looking at gay characters who are dying of AIDS, that's fine. If you're looking at gay characters who are in a dress, that's fine, who are very camp and decorating, or are the gay best friend. You know, the Eve Arden part that gays play in movies all the time, where they are the best friend of Sandra Bullock and they join with her in saying men are pigs. That's easy to do. But to do a movie about gay parents or to take the love life of a gay man seriously, like I did in The Opposite of Sex, makes people very uncomfortable. Just like gay marriage makes people uncomfortable. What is so threatening about that? I don't know.
You recently said it's a terrible climate right now, but personally I've never felt as a gay man freer than I am right now. It's a weird dichotomy. Would you talk about that dichotomy?
If you read the papers, yeah, you're scared, especially after this last election where everybody that I know who was gay took to their beds for a day or two because it was so personal. It felt personal, those anti-gay marriage laws in states, being supported by the majority of people. Certainly we're not the first group in America who's been reviled and hated and feared, but we really felt it. There was no way to deny that they don't like us. On the other hand, I live in California, and I'm very proud to be a Californian, and we have very, very good laws here. For example, when our adoption is, finally final, when it goes to the judge, both of our names, two male names, will be on the amended birth certificate. That's unusual. Both of us adopt as parents this child. So that's a freedom. And I'm also free to make my films. I'm just not free to make them with a $20 million budget. It has to be five, and we all get paid scale. But I'm free to make them. And I think that's a consequence of a lot of work by activists before me. So when I talk about being gay in America today, I have to not just respond to what I read in the papers, but actually look at my life and realize I've never been freer.
Since you've written gay characters for movies and television, what effect do you think gay characters on movies, in movies and on TV, have on people who don't really know gay people, or at least don't realize they know gay people?
Well, I'll give you a very good example. When we were first speaking to our birth mom, and I asked her, I said on the telephone, our very first conversation, I said, let me just ask you why you are interested in your child being raised by a same-sex couple. She said, well, do you ever watch Queer Eye for the Straight Guy? And I said, yes. And she goes, well, my mom and I watch that show, and we think those guys are so fun, and they deserve to have kids. I think they'd be great parents, all those guys on there. They're so funny, and So there's an there's an example of these characters, even ones that some of us in the arts disapprove of, who can really make a difference by just opening up somebody's mind in the middle of the country who may not have ever seen a gay character before in a positive way, or at least a non-threatening way.
Who do you disapprove of?
Gay characters who, you know, some of them are stereotypical. For example, I think the one I love the most, Carson, is the typical flamboyant gay character that would have been just as appropriate in 1930 and 1940 and 1950 as he is today. And a lot of people who are, you know, activists disapprove of Will and Grace, for example, because they think it confirms stereotypes. I always find those stereotypes to be alive and well in the gay culture, and they exist, and I approve of them. But that's the kind of character that I think is easily digestible by the audience, and even those characters make a big difference.
You wrote Lisa Kudrow's part for her.
Yeah, that's right.
What are some of the qualities of Lisa Kudrow that you built this part around, that you wanted to work with as a director?
When I say that, when I say this about Lisa, she's always a little off, maybe put off by it. But there was so much pain behind her eyes as an actress that I trust her. I trust her to get the pain of these ridiculous characters. I mean, Lucia was an uptight spinster, really. But if you played it like that, it wouldn't have been funny, and it wouldn't have worked, or it wouldn't have, you know, felt real to the audience. There's a pain in every character that she plays. And there's also the mask for the pain that she also plays. And you can see both with her. You see what's inside her, and you also see her covering it. And that's rare. It goes without saying that she's an incredibly gifted comic actress. I would think to myself as I was watching Friends, I often do when I'm watching a movie, is imagine the words the characters are saying typed out on a script page. And many of her biggest laughs were not on funny lines, but there was just something inside her comedically that came out. So she has that going for her. She has comedy. She has incredible pathos and pain. Her body is very expressive. The way she moves is very distinctive. And she's a lot of fun and smart. In fact, during The Opposite of Sex, she frightened me because I thought she was the smartest person on the set. And I was a first-time director, so I tried to not get shown up by her.
Your partner, Dan Bukatinsky, is an executive producer on her show, so I guess you both had the chance to work with her.
Our house is Lisa Kudrow 24/7. She's the third gay man in our house. We all met, of course, in The Opposite of Sex, and then for the next 5 or 7 years, every Friday night, Dan and I would go to her dressing room when they taped Friends, and we would be in her dressing room watching. On a television, they feed the show up to the dressing rooms of the actors, and we would eat the free food and watch the show. And for us, it was this incredible opportunity to be around a television classic. It would be like watching I Love Lucy in 1957. We wanted to be there, and we had a ball with Lisa. And one night they got to talking, and they decided to form a television company together, which has been very successful. So we compete for her now. We compete who she likes more, who has more FaceTime with her. Whose call she takes first. It's sick.
My guest is Don Roos. He wrote and directed the new film Happy Endings, which opens this weekend. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Don Roos. He wrote and directed the new movie Happy Endings. He also wrote and directed The Opposite of Sex. The movie that you made in between your two independent films, was Bounce, and that starred Ben Affleck and Gwyneth Paltrow. You directed it. Was directing a movie with Paltrow and Affleck-level stars and a big budget different in any major ways than directing the opposite of sex and happy endings?
It did change a lot. I think the biggest change was that was a script I directed that I did not write for myself to direct.
Oh, oh, oh.
I wrote it I wrote it to prove that I could write straight people after I wrote The Opposite of Sex. When I wrote The Opposite of Sex, I thought, oh, my God, you could not be gayer. You've got to write straight people instantly, emergently. So I did. And when they couldn't find anybody to direct it, which might have told me something, when they couldn't find anybody to direct it and The Opposite of Sex came out, they said, oh, why don't you? And that, I think, was the biggest difference. It wasn't a world I had planned on bringing to life. It also is true that the more money you spend on a film, the more you have lost your voice. You have got to take care of those stockholders. They own you if they pay for you. And when they pay $40 million for you, they can demand changes. They can take out objectionable things which interest you and maybe interest very much a small portion of the audience, but offend a larger portion of the audience. And I guess what I realized is I can't do what I want to do without offending people. That it's, you know, if I'm not offending people, I'm doing something wrong.
You've not only written your own movies, like The Opposite of Sex and The New Unhappy Endings, you've been a script doctor for other people's films. Like, I think you worked on Legally Blonde 2. What else did you serve in 2? What else did you serve as script doctor for?
Well, I never say. I can't confirm that. I never say what projects I work on.
Oh,
ever.
I see. I see. Okay.
You can, but I don't confirm it because it's... To me, I was rewritten as a young screenwriter by other people who were kind enough not to seek credit, and I was always very grateful to them because credit means a great deal. So I do all my work anonymously. They call me in, usually when a film is pretty close to shooting, and there are huge problems that they have neglected to take care of, like character development or a third act or dialogue that sounds reasonable. These things slip by because making a movie is so much about getting the talent together into the film and not really much about the story, the script. So they pay me a weekly rate to, you know, give them a third act or give them dialogue that sounds like people speak. And it's a wonderful way to, it's a little parasitical, but it's a wonderful way to practice writing without your ego. One of the things that's hard about writing is you're writing and you're judging, you know, do I have something important to say? Am I being deep? If they hate it, they hate me. When you're solving problems as a writer, it's a great freedom. It's really a wonderful way to be a craftsman. So I do enjoy it.
Because sexual relationships, not graphic sex, but sexual relationships, are at the center of The Opposite of Sex and your new movie, Happy Endings, I'm wondering if this isn't too personal, if the urgency and the importance of sex and sex as being so kind of central to who we are or who you are has changed as you've gotten older and now you're in your 50s and now you've recently adopted a daughter, so, you know, you're a father for the first time. Has your whole sense of, like, where sex fits into life shifted a little bit?
I'd have to say no. I'd have to say not that I'm aware of. You know, I think a lot of it is growing up gay, where something that you desire to do makes you an outcast and really damns you to hell for eternity. That gets your attention. You suddenly think, wow, sex is really important. I remember thinking as a child, I wish there was no such thing as sex. I wish people just were their daytime selves and nothing happened at night, ever, because it was so troubling. So that happened. And then, of course, being a young man in the 80s when sex killed your friends. It's very important. And it's the same kind of thing today. I mean, my family that I've been able to form, this child that we brought into her life, is a direct result of somebody's sexual activity, somebody's sexual impulses or urges that they may not have even been aware of. For better or worse, I think it's a major, major preoccupation with myself, and I don't think it's changed much.
You know, as serious as you are about sexuality as being at the center of life, you make comedies about sex, so obviously you also see an absurd or ridiculous aspect to how we behave as sexual beings.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's anything more ridiculous than sex. I've always felt that. When I first found out what it was, I thought, you can't be serious. That can't actually...
Right.
No, that's not... That's a joke. Yeah, I think it's very ridiculous. And particularly our inability to see sex as just a natural human desire. And instead, we put all of these things on it. We make the people special when they're just affairs, or we... You know, assume that it's life-changing when it's just the next one, or we assume it's just the next one when it's the way a child is brought into the world. We're very mixed up about it. It's very hard for us to look at sex. It's a part of our nature that's incredibly important but mysterious, very mysterious, and so we act very comically about it, very comically.
Well, Don Roos, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. I enjoy your show, so it's an honor to be on it.
Don Roos wrote and directed the new film Happy Endings. It opens Friday. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.